Listen.
Radio is an important means of communicating 3,000 years of habit in terms of diapering of babies.
Well, please tell me more.
Because radio reaches people, including those hard-to-get young people. Radio goes where they go and talks their language, recognizing the importance of contemporary sound.
And the sounds are instantly recognizable as belonging to the in-groups currently on top of the charts.
CITR, 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
It's wild.
Years ignoring. What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm with special guests today, Max and Howie. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, welcome. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Spencer Latu, and for today's show, we are speaking truth to power about a high school student union. But before we get to all that, I would like to acknowledge that the land on which we gather is the unceded territory of the Coast Salish peoples, including the territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. So, welcoming our special guests again today. Hi, guys. So you are here today to discuss what exactly?
So we're in the works of setting up a student union pretty much in the Vancouver School Board. So essentially, we are a left-wing ecologist union devoted to the preservation of the rights and interests of our constituency, the students of Vancouver. And we we demand student voice and democracy inside of the school board, and any solutions to any crises that may endanger our constituency.
Any crises in particular that you guys have in mind, or that spurred the creation of the student union, or this initiative for a student union?
We have a bunch of crises in mind. For example, the crisis of capitalism currently, the ecologist crisis. Failures of the current student school system, and failures of the current social relations of the status quo. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. So there's a lot to unpack there, but it sounds like you guys are on the right path, at least in my opinion. So you guys are from which high school in the Vancouver school district?
We're both from Yeohill Secondary. It's a high school in UBC.
Nice, located on this campus, this lovely campus.
Yep. I am moving to Prince of Wales next year, but to stay at Yeohill.
Nice, nice. Divide and conquer. I love the strategy already.
Yes,
you guys are taking this very seriously.
Quite.
Yep.
Okay, so you mentioned a few crises. And you've given me, I'm very happy to be one of the first to look at part one of the Provisional Manifesto and Program of the United Students of Vancouver. Thank you for allowing me to see from the inside your guys' cadre so far. So you have quite a lengthy manifesto so far. It starts off with an introduction and raison d'etre. Max, if you would be so kind to get into, you know, introducing this idea to everybody, and also, you know, what the motivations were.
Okay, so our motivation is that the status quo of our society is greatly disadvantaging the students of Vancouver and the younger generations of our society. The institutions that are meant to serve us are and continue to be deteriorating. Our universities are choked as the vital flow of public funding is shrunk further and further, and our school board fails in greater and greater ways to educate the students of Vancouver. Essentially, the institutions which hold us all together are destroyed as the government cuts back their funding.
Interesting. Okay. So you mentioned, obviously, the cuts to education that are being felt everywhere, not just in British Columbia, but across the country. You know, I'm thinking specifically of Ontario and the Doug Ford education cuts, even internationally, the Brazilian student uprising against Jair Bolsonaro. So this is certainly not a localized event. It almost seems to be a global cutback as capital, sees less and less profitable investment and begins to overaccumulate even more so. So what prompted you guys to get into this? So, you know, you guys are friends. I'm going to take a wild guess at assuming you've been friends for a while. And, you know, is there a particular event that got you guys thinking like, hey, we need a student union? Are you inspired by any other social movements that are going on, or, you know, split off from any of those social movements?
So me, for one, before just recently, I was actually pretty oblivious to much of the going-ons in the world. However, after being introduced to proper education and literature, I began to see how many of my peers are not really interested or engaged in many of the problems that exist in the world. So it is pretty much then I thought, hey, we should form a union so people can actually get the knowledge or know what they need to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good place to start. Yeah, I think about the lack of political education I had personally in high school, and I really had no idea what was going on at all. I think, you know, I didn't think there was much that existed outside liberals and conservatives, Democrats and Republicans. So, yeah.
Right.
Max, do you have any previous political experience? You know, what prompted you to work with your friend Howie on this project?
Well, I've been political for most of this past year. I began by working inside the students' climate strikers. Essentially, I was one of the people who has organized their climate strikes in Vancouver, and I helped write what I guess would be our statement of principles, essentially how we organize ourselves, what we do, all that stuff. And then essentially, over time, it became more and more corporatized. And eventually, I just decided there was no need for it. There was no need for me to continue to organize inside it, because as this went on, I just felt pretty disgusted at the way that our movement was progressing.
Okay, yeah. So you want to keep it really grassroots, yes. You know, keep it true to the people. Yes. That's very honorable of you guys, and you know, quite a high level of political education for both of you to see through the NGO lies and the kind of the misdirection that's going on, or I'd like to say sleight of hand that is happening as far as, you know, the neo-colonial, neoliberalized protest movements that are completely controlled by foundation money, which, you know, I is lost on many of my quote-unquote leftist friends, and lost on most of quote-unquote leftist Twitter. So that's something to be aware of and to commend you for. So
Thank you.
Back to your manifesto. So you have a critique of the status quo, social relations of the status quo, failures of the status quo, and system in crisis. So, you know, if you could just give me a kind of a Coles Notes kind of explanation of what you think is going on, and maybe you can also transition from what you think is, you know, what are the issues of today and what things you critique, and kind of what your program for solving these issues are, or some ideas that you guys are kind of running by.
Well, okay, to begin, in this critique of the status quo, we are discussing what are the problems with the status quo, and essentially the social relations as evidenced, and the ecological crisis as system in crisis. Okay, so right now the social relations are that we are in a state of class warfare, extreme social inequality, and extreme social strife because of the lack of funding for the institutions of social solidarity, for example, healthcare, education, social services, etc. The failures of the status quo essentially talks about the failures of our education system, all that mess. And then the system in crisis talks about the ecological crisis, the logic behind the ecological crisis, and the capitalist mode of production.
Wow, some really, really high-level stuff. I see you cite Karl Marx's Das Kapital, Volumes 1, 2, and 3. Yes, it exists beyond Volume 1, and everybody should pick up a copy and try starting to read through that, because if we're going to get any movement on the issues of today, certainly Marxism is not a dead science and certainly should be looked at seriously, especially as we see the liberal capitalist order fall apart and descend into, at this stage, I don't think it's too outlandish to say proto-fascist elements are starting to rear their head or are already in power in certain countries that will remain unnamed, aka the United States of America. So I think you hit kind of at least what I would view the nails on the head, and especially, you know, relating it to your position in society as students. You know, I think that, you know, as you spend most of your time at school, it's pretty apparent that the education system is falling apart. What are your experiences with the educational system? Where do you think, you know, maybe I'll pass this off to Howie if you want to start us off. You know, what are you guys seeing as far as, you know, the educational system in crisis?
So there's a couple different, I guess, parts to how the system is failing. Number one, which is pretty obvious, it's I want to hit on the point of when school starts, the hour.
Mm.
So in most public schools, as you may or may know, school starts at just before 9, around 8:45-ish. However, interestingly, in light of, I guess, recent studies, perhaps not so recent, we know that teenagers around the age, around the high school age, actually require about 8 to 11 hours of sleep. Best is 9 and 11. And another thing, the students get their best sleep in a bit later in the morning. Mm-hmm. So when school is just beginning in the day, students are supposed to be getting their best quality of sleep.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it seems like, you know, the education system's really missing out if they're not, you know, having students primed and ready for education. That's already a crisis in and of itself. Max, if I pass this one on to you. So, you know, what are some other symptoms of the educational crises and what we're seeing as far as provincial education, our provincial education system, but certainly what you guys are facing as students right now?
Okay. Secondly, school facilities are severely, and I did not mean this slightly, severely lacking. For example, Kitsilano Secondary was just restored 2 years ago,
mm-hmm.
at the cost of $50 million of taxpayer money. However, after 2 years of service, the building is already falling apart yet again. The roof regularly springs leaks, dividers between urinals have fallen off, and machines in the metalworks shop fall apart constantly. As well, at Domaros, my previous school, there is massive leakage in the roof. For example, in the gym, there was a time at which part of the roof essentially was gone, and the water was just dripping right through.
Wow.
And the teachers had to put buckets around that hole so that they could collect all the water.
Okay. It's not just a figure of speech. It is literally falling apart. So what would you attribute, at least, you know, in your guys' experience and maybe in your analysis of the situation, you know, what do you think is causing, you know, at least the really glaring infrastructure problems, such as missing part of a roof of a high school? What would you diagnose that as?
Partially corruption. Secondly, the fact that there is basically no real way to catch the corruption, and that is effectively what the real problem is. I personally think that the whole lack of accounting inside this whole thing, you know, like, for example, if you've got a principal, the principal can just go to the friend, and the friend will provide all the stuff, all the materials.
So is that how contracts are given out in high schools, is through administrators, or?
I would appear to think so.
Oh, okay.
I am not an expert on this issue, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. but I would appear to think so.
Okay, well, that's problematic to say the least. We're going to have to take a short break for commercials, but we'll be right back. We're discussing a possible high school student union initiative from my special guests, Max and Howie. So we'll be right back after that.
The Vancouver Folk Music Festival takes place at Jericho Beach Park, July 19th to the 21st. Join us for an unforgettable weekend featuring 59 artists from around the world, food from delicious local vendors, and more. Tickets at www.thefestival.bc.ca or at Zulu, Neptune, and Red Cat Records.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smoke weed every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.com.
Old or New Testament?
I think the New Testament.
The question is, Pilate, you remember Pilate from the New Testament?
Pontius Pilate, he fiddled well.
Yeah, no, well, just a minute. Let me ask the question, then you can give me the answer, okay? Did Pilate want Jesus to be crucified?
Yep, Pontius Pilate washed his hands of it.
So did he want him to be crucified?
Yeah.
No. No. No.
Well, tune in every Friday afternoon, 3:30 to the Night Watch Show on Sunya.
Well, find a good church. It'll help you.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from the Musqueam, Musqueam territory. I'm joined here with special guests Max and Howie. They are starting up a high school student union to push back against the forces of global imperialism. And tip of the hat to you guys for that awesome initiative. And you guys are, you know, a grassroots group, you know, rejecting the not-for-profit industrial complex right off the bat. So, you know, once again, kudos to you guys. So how do you guys plan on getting this started? So I understand that you have a small cadre of people, just a few friends that are interested in leftist theory and leftist politics. So where are you guys at right now?
So right now we only have a few members, or four to be exact. However, we plan on expanding this to, I guess, the pretty much entire VSB.
Yes.
And the school district. We have I guess a campaign-esque, a quote unquote propaganda campaign to attempt to bring people in.
Nice. So, Max, how are you guys going to bring people in and get them politically engaged?
Well, as Howie referenced, we are running a public relations campaign. We are going to distribute multiple pamphlets. Our first one is going to be on the 10 o'clock school.
And the 10 o'clock school, we mentioned earlier, you gave us some scientific data that says that students perform better at a 10 a.m. start, and when moved back to an 8:50 start, which is where most high schools start, they not only did poorer on tests, but also suffered health-wise. They were more often sick, and it's scientifically proven that teenagers get the most important hours of sleep are from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m., right. You mentioned earlier,
yes.
And they're missing that with the current 8:50 a.m. school start. So that's kind of where you're starting your high school campaign, high school student union campaign with. So you're going to distribute literature. What are your pamphlets discussing?
To begin, common issues, especially the fact that students really don't like going to school early. That's something that many students don't like.
Students like myself did not like going very early.
Yeah. We will discuss essentially all important issues that we see students facing, as well ecological crisis, the failures of the school system. We will attempt to make a pamphlet campaign about all those different things, and then we're going to distribute them at big events, and that is how we're going to gain members. We're going to also do meetings over time,
right?
Yeah, to bring in more and more people, and eventually, once you reach a critical mass of members, we're going to start organizing our own events to a extent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
As well, the focus of our organization primarily is for political education of the masses of the students of Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes.
Awesome. That sounds like a great program. So as far as political education goes, what are you guys thinking about discussing that isn't really covered in the high school curriculum?
Yeah. So from what I've seen, it is not at all talked about, at least in regards to the curriculum. I mean, some teachers may do it of their own free will for better or for worse. But in general, students aren't really introduced to the to recent news, to problems or political theories, philosophies, any of that stuff in during high school. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, I can safely attest that I knew nothing beyond liberals and conservatives myself. And, you know, I was pretty confused politically until I was almost done university. So I can safely say that's the case. So looking at current issues kind of facing high school students. So I see in the news, Jason Kenney in Alberta is rethinking gay straight alliances in schools. And that's, although that's over in Alberta, so kind of out of your guys' purview, but you know, it's kind of showing, it's rearing its ugly head in high school issues, I guess to say, or well, I guess across all provincial schooling, so from K to 12, so to speak, there is an anti-SOGI, so you know, sexual orientation, gender identity, that that legislation that was put through to educate and also create and foster learning environments for students of transgender students and LGBT students, really opening up the educational system to make sure that they're included as well. And there's a pretty brutal backlash. We've seen some ugly events on campus at they hosted an anti-SOGI speaker / far-right rally on this campus that led to UBC being disinvited from the Vancouver Pride Parade. However, the Pride Parade is still welcoming cops, which is very interesting posturing, you know, just to say that, you know, UBC certainly shouldn't be invited for being complicit in far right organizing and giving a safe space to the far right on campus to decry safe spaces, as contradictory as that is, but still giving space for cops, the guard dogs of Capitol. I see in your manifesto for the common benefit, you guys really hit on the head the social inequality aspect, especially economics and the ecological crisis, which, you know, could be an existential threat to organized human life. Have you guys, what's your guys' thoughts on what's going on as far as anti-SOGI sentiment is across the province, the far right of the province?
Personally, I believe that this whole anti-SOGI thing, it's a backlash against liberal politics that do not address the underlying problems under which material conditions come from. Effectively, there's massive inequality. All this stuff leads to people wanting someone to blame. People are not allowed to blame their nice little capitalist overlords. Mm-hmm.
The bosses could never be at fault for this stuff. Yes.
Never.
Instead, they must blame somebody else, somebody more at their level.
Mm-hmm. Or below them, right? Yes. Punching down is big for these folks, yeah.
Mm. That means they want to blame people for benefiting from SOGI, LGBTQ kids or transgender kids, stuff like that, because this is punchy below them. This is allowed by the capitalist hierarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you guys' program definitely targets the capitalist hierarchy, which is super important because, you know, as long as there's class society, there will always be oppression. And until class society goes, you know, we're not going to get rid of oppression. We can't just, you know, the culture war has been won by the left, so to speak. You know, nobody's using, you know, horrific terms like the R word in public is frowned upon. You know, when I went to high school, people would use homophobic slurs very flippantly, and now that's completely gone from society. So I can say that's a step forward. However, class society still remains, and now we're seeing a pretty horrific reaction, you know, rearing its ugly head with the far right, you know, seizing upon these things such as SOGI. With your student union, do you view it as, you know, a vehicle for solidarity, you know, standing up for these students and giving them a voice? What are your guys' thoughts on, you know, because as important as it is to, you know, target the, you know, the capitalist system and, you know, making sure that's obviously, you know, at the forefront, dealing with the superstructural problems, not just the economic base, you know, how do you guys, you know, posit that? It could also be a great, you know, organizing tool, because a lot of people, you know, don't really understand, you know, the stuff that you guys, you know, articulate really clearly, you know, shockingly to come from high school students. You know, what's your thoughts on, you know, discuss solidarity efforts with LGBT students and people who are being targeted for SOGI?
I guess a big thing would be education, you know, from, I guess, the perspective of the LGBT community. So I think a part of why discrimination like this happens is a lack of understanding between the two parties.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't exactly know how big of a part it plays, but I'm sure that it does play a part. And once you once you are introduced to a person, and you actually see them as, you know, another person, it'll be, I guess, harder to discriminate.
Yeah, to have that virulent hatred for them. Because at least to me, because I agree with what you're saying, because at least for me, it appears that most of these far-right groups and, you know, what they, you know, get off to with the SJWs getting owned on YouTube kind of sphere, it seems that they're dealing more like a caricature of these people and not dealing with them as human beings, because, you know, these people are, you know, discriminated against in regular society. You know, we live in a, you know, cisgendered heteronormative society, so it's really hard for, you know, LGBT you know, youth, well, especially youth, you know, who have, you know, very little agency, especially within their own schools, within the confines of the public education system. You know, without this legislation, they're, you know, really left out to dry. So, you know, I guess I'm just kind of trying to, you know, throw out some ideas at you guys, you know, really get you thinking about, you know, ways to reach out, because, you know, at least for me, when it comes to like the ideal leftist org, you know, maybe this may be me romanticizing a bit, but I think about the Black Panther Party for self-defense and, you know, how they reach out into the community and met the community needs. And, you know, thinking about, you know, who's under attack right now as far as high school students, you know, it appears that, you know, at least right now what the far right is doing, and, you know, And if there's anybody that can, you know, de-radicalize or, you know, reach out to right-leaning students who are trapped in the gamer YouTube pipeline, from gamer videos to anti-SJW, then to the Ben Shapiros, and, you know, further and further down that rabbit hole. So just your Max, do you have any thoughts on that subject at all?
Well, I personally went through that timeline. I am personally a gamer.
Wow, that's really brave of you to come out as a gamer.
Yes. I honestly was never exposed to leftist theory up until I came to my current school. And thing is, for that reason, I went through that pipeline slowly and slowly. I was at first exposed to far right terminology such as Kekistan and all that whole rabbit hole.
Oh no.
When I was gaming, and over time I was curious about that. I slowly went down that rabbit hole because my mental state was deteriorating due to my unfortunate bad schooling. And
really comes full circle.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It really does.
And therefore I slowly went down that rabbit hole, down all the way past Ben Shapiro down to Breitbart.
Oh no. Yeah.
Anything but Breitbart.
Yeah. Breitbart's the bottom of that hole for sure. So that's really interesting that you bring up, you know, how the failing public school system almost directs people towards these really reactionary YouTube channels, and, you know, everyone spending all their time on behind screens anyway. So it's really fascinating. And, you know, and as you're, you know, as you develop your, you know, revolutionary theory and practice, you know, maybe just something out there is, you know, you could have a, you know, a political education seminar or something to that effect, where you can discuss these ideas and hopefully, you know, bring some kids back from the brink and, you know, point them in the real direction. That's not, you know, turns out it's not all those LGBT teens that are ruining society, but it's in fact the bosses. So, you know, there's...
Yeah, that is what we hope we can educate.
Yeah, be a countervailing force to the YouTube algorithm.
Yeah.
That is, in fact, our primary purpose. We hope to redirect people from this far right into a truly leftist-leaning view.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to essentially be a political education vehicle to organize the students of Vancouver into a leftist direction.
Yeah, because it does, you know, people are waking up. You know, it's pretty obvious when you look around, you know, how, you know, infrastructure's falling apart. The you know, there's, you know, forest fires every year that are worse than the year past every single year. So people are, you know, viscerally aware. I just, you know, personally, at least I think, are just completely, you know, unaware of how things really work. And they're just left alone with their, as you mentioned earlier, horrible public education that turns into, you know, horrific reactionary ideologies and politics. So, yeah. So you guys mentioned that you're from University Hill. That's great. So here's another superstructural question. You know, how do you think that, or at least what are your guys's, what are you guys learning in high school about settler colonialism and, you know, indigenous issues that are happening in Canada? What are high school kids exposed to? Like, what do you learn in class about these topics?
Essentially that it is a past thing. Essentially, it doesn't happen anymore. They deny that it continues to exist, and...
Really?
Yep.
Wow. And this is in social studies class, some humanities...
Yeah.
So really indoctrinating everybody. And it's, you know, it's really ironic too, because, you know, the public education system, you know, was created by the architect of Canadian genocide, Sir John A. Macdonald, in the late 19th century to not only, you know, bolster quote unquote national unity, but also to, you know, eradicate indigenous culture and, you know, start to assimilate indigenous children to the white or Western way of life. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting how little has changed in the over 100 years since. So, Howard, do you have any thoughts on what you're getting out of your public education as far as indigenous issues are concerned?
Honestly, I think just glossing over the facts, if anything. In the curriculum there is a section on, I guess, the history indigenous people in Canada, but there's not a lot of nuance in there.
Mm.
It's pretty much as Max said. Now, I have decided to not take social studies in this year, so it's not in recent memory. But from what I can remember, there wasn't really that much, like, juice in the education.
Yeah, probably not too much that's critical of Canadian society and settler society at all. So, I that's what I remember from mine, at least. I remember just getting, you know, I think it was maybe one class, if that, about the Indian Act, and very little centering of Indigenous peoples. It's main, from what I can recall, it was really remembering, you know, all the super important white people from history. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to know Samuel de Champlain, you got to know Sir John A. Macdonald, and then, you know, maybe John Diefenbaker if you get around to it. Yeah. And, oh yeah, and the Canadian national unity and the building of the railroad was good. They really gloss over the clearing the plains aspect of it and the starving people to build the railroad. They really, really gloss over that one. So we're going to have to take a short break for commercials. We'll be right back after that.
There is a penguin sliding on an iceberg, and then the fiery ice cracks, and the penguin sees Donald Trump and feels numb and dies. Donald Trump hops into a balloon and floats away. A child sees him and says, "Look, something ugly is in a balloon." The end.
Are you a kid with a story to tell?
Want to learn how to make great radio?
Then sign up for CITR's
Kids Radio Camp!
On-air training,
games,
field trips,
and more, happening this summer from July 15th to 19th.
Kids aged 11 to 14 are welcome.
To register, go to citr.ca.
Tune in to African Rhythms every Friday from 7:30 to 9 o'clock with your host, David Love Jones, as he plays a heavyweight selection of classics from the past, present, and future. This includes jazz, soul, hip-hop, Afro-Latin, funk, and eclectic Brazilian rhythms.
Lots of people, they take it like a game.
Oh, man. What?
I really wanted to catch that football game, but I have to clean my room. I'm so bummed.
Yo, man, totally chill out. You can catch it on CITR.
CITR?
Did someone say CITR?
Yeah.
CITR Radio brings you Thunderbird Sports on the weekends. Catch all the action and don't miss a moment of play with our live play-by-play and color commentary. Only on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow, that's great.
And if you can't catch the game, tune in at 3:30 p.m. every Thursday for our weekly update on UBC Athletics with live scores, recaps, and in-depth analysis.
Oh, okay, dude. We get it.
Dude.
Only on CITR.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from NCU Musqueam territory. So I'm joined with special guests Max and Howie for the rest of the show. We've been discussing their initiative for a high school student union, a very, very brave and quite frankly, much needed political education for high schoolers. We're dealing with multiple crises, crises of capitalism. We're dealing with permanent war to maintain this horrific imperialist system. Consumerism runs rampant. Landfills are full of crap that is created just to be thrown away within 90 days. And we're also dealing with pretty serious proto-fascist reaction right now, culminating in brutal Islamophobia, horrific treatment of LGBT people, especially LGBT high schoolers, which we recently had a clash on our very own UBC campus for. And let's not forget also what happens when you have a system of infinite growth within a finite system. You have a climate crisis. And from that, we're very lucky to be joined by these two high schoolers who are doing great work trying to politically educate their classmates. Very, very impressed. I mean, when I was in high school, I didn't even know anything about politics at all. So I'm just extremely impressed that these kids are doing as much as they did. I didn't even know who Karl Marx was at all. So, you know, more power to them, let alone writing their own political manifestos. So. But, you know, unfortunately, as the kids are waking up, you know, it's probably due to this elephant in the room that, at least haunts or is a specter haunting my thoughts, which is, you know, coming ecological collapse. You know, we're dealing with massive die-offs of thousands of species. I think it's, what is it? I don't know if you guys know the facts on this one, but, you know, the biodiversity is a serious issue. Bees, what's happened to them? Bees are dying at incredible rates. And all we can do is buy some Honey Nut Cheerios to support the bees. You know, we really are, you know, absolutely completely cut off of any real political solutions to these, you know, systemic problems. So, you know, I'd love to ask your guys' thoughts on climate change as young people. Howie, maybe you can start us off. You know, what's your take on the climate crisis?
As you know, it's a insanely big crisis that would perhaps spell the end of, I guess, people, humanity, if we don't like actually take it seriously and mm-hmm. Take action to it. With the current educational, I guess.
Is it even covered in education? Do you discuss climate change at all? Is that really a thing?
Or? Not really. Like, from the past year of schooling, I don't remember a single mention of the climate change outside of some teachers talking about the news every once in a while. So it is definitely not in the curriculum at all to talk about problems like serious problems like climate change.
That's really upsetting, and you know, it's going to affect you guys the most because this is the land that you're inheriting, and you know, if it's ravaged by, you know, what, like once in a 500 year flood every single year, you know, it's really not something that you guys, you know, not only deserve but can really thrive in. So it's a really, really disgusting treatment of the planet by the capitalist class.
Yeah.
Max, you mentioned earlier you were involved with Climate Strike Canada and climate strikes. What are your thoughts on the climate crisis?
It's massive. you can't really wrap your head around it. It's more of something that's just there, and you must fight it. Essentially, like, it could destroy all of us, is how he said, but it's more something that you must fight, and you must propose solutions against other than something you can really understand. Mm-hmm. None of us understand what we are destroying, so therefore, how can we understand this crisis? We must instead try to fight it, and we must propose solutions to it.
So, okay, so solutions. Do you have solutions in your, you know, what at least maybe what high school students would like to see as solutions to, you know, the climate crisis in your program or, you know, in your organizing?
We consider the ecological crisis to be a great big part of our program, as stated that we have an entire section of a chapter devoted to it, systemic crisis, and effectively, we would like to see decarbonization of our economy. We mm-hmm. would like to see a vastly more ecological economy. That is what challenges capital, because capital can only accommodate a green little nice green icon capitalism.
We were discussing green capitalism in the show for the last few weeks, at least, until it became apparent to me how little regard the ruling class has for the climate crisis. Even, you know, these things parroted by the pseudo left about the Green New Deal and its actual inability to do anything about climate change, and certainly not save the environment. In fact, it's predicated on financialization of the environment and selling it off to the highest bidder. So you guys, you know, you're opposing, you know, climate change, which is, you know, I would like to think a pretty good position to hold. You know, I'm certainly not pro climate change. I'm certainly not a denier of it. It's pretty apparent. Are you satisfied with the Green New Deal for what the, you know, what green capitalism holds for students, or what do you think high school students should know about green capitalism and the Green New Deal?
High school students should know that the Green New Deal is not a pill that can solve everything magically.
Mm-hmm.
It is just a band-aid on the issue. That's what high school students should know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't solve the fundamental problem of over-accumulation of capital. It rather just puts a little bandage on it and then says, you know, we've decarbonized our economy. We're not emitting any more carbon. Instead,
or you're buying a carbon offset as pretending that, you know, your money matters to what the environment is or matters to biodiversity. It's not real, guys. It's not. It's predicated on the extraction of surplus value from workers. You know, I'm sorry, Al Gore, but, you know, you jet setting is not carbon neutral at all. So that's interesting that you guys hold that position. Not too many people are really even aware. And, you know, I think the not-for-profit industrial complex is really, and all the environmental NGOs, I mean, Bill McKibben, the founder of 350.org, recently came out in defense of the Pentagon as a paragon for defeating climate change. So that, I thought that was fascinating, to say the least. So for, I guess, you know, back to climate change, as a high school student union, where do you see a solution? So you just said about, you know, what students should know. What do you think students should be advocating for? What's something that students should be fighting for? What should they be putting their political efforts into?
Ecological socialism.
Ecological socialism. So what does that entail?
Effectively, a system in which we respect nature, in which we consume inside the sustainable levels that nature can accommodate us in, and in which we use as little as possible, in which we don't have all this consumerist nonsense of buy this, buy that, everywhere. Advertisements here, advertisements there, advertisements in your living room. Here, you have this new car that you could buy. We don't want that. Mm-hmm. We want simple, you have one of everything, and then you use those things up until up until you can't use them anymore, and then you only consume more after that. You don't consume more based off of your wants. You consume based on needs.
Yeah, and the wants that are injected into our minds through capital and, you know, over-accumulated capital, which is fed back to us in the form of advertising, like you mentioned earlier. And, you know, this is kind of a tangential point, but, you know, when I was in high school, a huge issue was, you know, body issues that high school students were having, you know, looking at, you know, images on TV causing, you know, especially teenage girls who are struggling with dealing with, you know, what media tells people to look like and, you know, causing mental health problems. So it's interesting that you guys tie in the economics of it, because I feel like it really deals with a lot of the problems people are having, whether it be, you know, climate change, like you said, but also with, you know, artificial needs created by capital itself, which have the really horrible effect on, you know, on teenagers' mental health. Teenage suicides are through the roof. Right now, I think, you know, we're seeing a spike in teenage girl suicides, which is shocking because usually females have a much lower suicide rate than males. So this is really disturbing development in capitalism, really going against, you know, what people even thought was possible. That's really awesome that you guys are at least, you know, in my opinion, hitting it right at the roots of the problem. Okay, so moving on, well, I guess kind of tracing it back. So, you know, obviously you guys are taking an ecological socialist standpoint. Have you guys thought about much, and, you know, this is something that we discuss on the show a lot, about how colonization and imperialism, you know, really two sides of the same capitalist coin of the primitive accumulation and dispossession of indigenous lands and resources, you know, to be sold to consumers and only increase profits of these massive multinational corporations. Are you going to be incorporating a decolonial or anti-colonial lens to your organizing? Really, you know, what are your guys' thoughts on that? Do you see how colonization and climate change are interrelated? Have you guys developed some theory on that? I mean, it's something I'm working through, and I'm much older than you guys, so, you know, no worries if it hasn't really come up yet, especially with your lack of engagement with indigenous issues, all thanks to the horrific public school educational system that we're dealing with. You guys have any thoughts on settler colonialism?
Yeah. So yes, for me personally, as you can probably tell, I'm quite big into the education aspect of a lot of things. So as I said before, there isn't really much education, in high school about the current going-ons, about topics that is big problems, but I just glossed over, so people don't have to. So the people in power don't have to deal with them. So the main thing I want to see is more of a focus on introducing the education of the problems or the struggles that indigenous people face today. Mm-hmm. And yeah, generally.
Well, it's ironic that, you know, your guys' proposition is to educate within the educational system.
Yeah, which is pretty funny.
Very, you know, it's the levels of contradiction here. Max, do you have any thoughts on settler colonialism and how it ties into, you know, the larger struggle against capitalism?
Settler colonialism is a very big part of capitalism. Essentially, capitalism began with clearings like the Scotland clearings, for example. That was when farmers were removed from the land and forced to instead tenant farm the land in other places instead of having their own land, which they could farm on for however long they wanted. This is the same with settler colonialism. Effectively, they are forced to move past the stage of primitive agrarian society in which you have your own farm, and instead you're supposed to tenant farm or do whatever you want on utilizing the means of production provided to you by your fellow capitalist overlord.
Mm, yeah. So, I mean, and now applying that in a Canadian setting, you know, especially, you know, where we're both situated, you know, University of British Columbia and University Hill Secondary, you know, this is, like you're saying, that primitive accumulation of forcing people off the land, you know, except for these people, you know, they weren't turned necessarily into proletarians right away. They were turned into, you know, they were massacred and, you know, forced into residential schools. So, I mean, I guess I'm just kind of pushing this because, at least in my opinion, the failure of the current, you know, quote unquote left, and, you know, I say quote unquote because I just don't know, you know, how in good faith a lot of these people are, you know, or if they're just really willing to help reinforce, you know, these colonization narratives and racist narratives that, you know, place Western civilization, quote unquote, or, you know, our current, you know, Canadian society above, you know, Indigenous society, and the way that, you know, humans have lived, you know, in harmony with nature and have found a way to, you know, not cause a climate crisis and, you know, in fact, lived here since time immemorial and developed, you know, complex societies such as, you know, the first constitution in Turtle Island is not, you know, brought by the French and the English. It was, you know, the Haudenosaunee peoples I forget exactly how many nations it was, confederation that really gave rise to, you know, even influence settler constitutions such as like the United States Constitution and later the Canadian Constitution. So, you know, just wondering what, you know, obviously other than educating people on these facts that really are not taught in schools, as far as your organizing is concerned, you know, do you see yourselves as, you know, working with, you know, Musqueam Nation that you guys, you know, your schools situated on and maybe pushing for Indigenous issues as well?
Oh, yes, for sure. We can't organize around indigenous issues, around colonialism, without involving Indigenous people, mm-hmm. you know? Like, it's sort of like organizing for oranges to be eaten more without including oranges.
Yeah.
So if we do not include the Indigenous perspective, we'll be doing the same thing that we are accusing the current system of doing.
Yeah, really. Wow. That was really well said. Yeah, it's just more perpetuation of Indigenous oppression. And, you know, and quite frankly, I'd say, at least in my estimations, I personally hold settler society responsible for the climate crisis, you know, for imperialism, perpetual war, especially considering the United States is the global hegemon. And that was, you know, founded on, you know, stolen land and then stolen labor from African slaves. And Canada's much the same. We had slave labor and, you know, obviously Indigenous genocide here, which is somehow a contentious issue. I'll never understand that one, but that's another thought for another day. Okay, so back to your guys' organizing. And I guess my prototypical organization, once again, is the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. You know, what community needs do you guys see for high school students? So we discussed already the 10 a.m. start. Are there any other needs that need to be served, do you think, in this community, or maybe at a local level, if not an entire city level?
I mean, I guess it would be the entire district level. Because funnily enough, despite the primary purpose of the Vancouver School Board is to educate, students are not really given given adequate education, even for, let's say, university.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the main thing was... a main hope that I have, that we have, would be increasing the quality of education within the system.
Okay, yeah, we're talking also pre-show about some other failures in the education system. So, where does it need to be improved? Do you think that is leaving students out to dry?
So, in the education system,
yeah. What do you not have now that you think you need?
More, I guess, current news, as we've discussed before.
Mm-hmm.
Also, basic literary skills. So for me personally, up until, let's say, I think half a year ago, I couldn't read books past the words. I couldn't yeah, all the hidden meanings, the double meanings that there exist in the books, I couldn't see them. And the basics of how to write an essay, which is necessary for university, or I guess for life in general, I did not know how to adequately write a, let's say, a persuasive essay.
Wow, yeah. That's really shocking. Yeah, I remember from my time in high school, I didn't really learn how to write a proper essay until I transferred into a private education system. So, you know, that's really, I think, the largest indictment of public education is that it doesn't prepare any of the students, really, if they're not coming from a really privileged background where they have university educated people in their lives, to really succeed and thrive or even make it to the post-secondary level. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Unceded Musqueam Territory. I'm joined with two special guests, Max and Howie. They're trying to form a high school student union, which I think is, you know, much overdue and much needed. And, you know, high school students matter too. I know you guys can't vote, but, you know, you're affected by the political structure. Thus, I think, you know, if you're affected by it, you should have a voice and you should have a say in it. You know, that's democracy, right? Yeah. One person, one vote, you know, you guys are people too, right? So, yeah. Max, following along our discussion about, you know, the pitfalls of education and things that you want to see change and what reforms or maybe changes to curriculum, What do you want to push for in that sense?
Well, that is a very long answer. That is a question that requires a very long answer. Well, that could require
a lot of
discussion. Okay, so first off, the new curriculum is extremely inadequate. Like, it begins out calling for a libertarian education system, for example, inquisitive learning, which was in play at Nobaro's Point, my former school.
Sorry, and, you know, just what do you mean by libertarian?
Because it is supposed to be without as much guidance, without as much rules on which you can, on which the education, on which you can be educated. Like, essentially, you're supposed to guide yourself, not some random dictator is supposed to guide you. Mm-hmm. Essentially, that's what it's supposed to be.
Like normal school, with our, where we're used to the dictator. But yeah, go on.
But you see, the thing is, at Nobaro's, it was not, in fact, as libertarian as outwardly thought. For example, when I wanted to read books or look up material outside of school, outside of normal school study time.
You mean like recess and lunch time?
Yeah, yeah. Effectively, they would confiscate my phone, or they would write me up to the office
for reading.
Yes,
or reading outside of the confines of the school.
Yes, essentially, like, yeah, at lunchtime when I got a book from the library, bing, I get written up to the office.
Wow, that's some really dystopic. Dystopic stuff going on in school, and this school is experimental school. So, you know, what kind of experiment do you think they're working on there? Are they trying to find a new corporate friendly plan where students are nice and regimented and only read during pre-approved hours? You know, they don't make sure they're not, you know, God forbid, learning or becoming, you know, class conscious in their free time. You know. Why? What do you think is? What's the point of that? What's going on over there?
I think it is. Nobaro's is effectively a very nice and corporate friendly version of the old libertarian school philosophy. Essentially, it comprises the worst of the libertarian philosophy, and then it also adds a taste of the authoritarian to it, so that it prepares people to become the new workers, as well as indoctrinating them into this philosophy of, I guess, restricted inquiry learning.
It's kind of like that, you know, the double meaning of, like, you know, of libertarian capitalism, which is super, or like anarcho-capitalism, which is, you know, completely contradictory, and insofar that, you know, you can't really separate capitalist modes of production from without state power. You can't have, you know, people, you know, how else are you supposed to get people to show up to work if it's not, you know, sorry, not show up to work per se, because people would work on their own, you know, but how are they supposed to show up to exploitative, you know, menial wage labor with, if it wasn't for, you know, a guy with a gun at the end of the road, you know, I mean, how are you supposed to get your food? Well, you know, I have to sell myself for 8 hours a day and then, you know, then I have to cough up whatever that is to another capitalist. And if I don't, you know, here's the sheriff to come drag me away, right? So I guess, you know, this is kind of getting people to believe that, you know, oh, I'm free. There's, you know, not only is there now, now there's still a state power, obviously, controlling us, but now, you know, I'm supposed to pretend that it's not there and that I'm supposed to cherish this, you know, quote unquote freedom I'm living. But in reality, we're just living in a capitalist, dystopic, hellhole kind of world where, you know, there's really just, you know, fiefdoms of petty tyrants that own these large corporations and have people more or less till the land with, you know, quite frankly, a worse situation than feudalism. And it seems that these, you know, experimental quote-unquote schools are really getting kids ready for that, you know, for lack of a better term.
Freedom is slavery.
Yeah. Seriously.
Indeed. Yeah.
Okay. And then another thing that I'm curious about, because, you know, I can't help but think about how misled I was, because when I was in high school, I was kind of on the edge of the tech revolution. Silicon Valley was kind of just getting out. It hadn't completely taken over society. You know, not everybody was always on their phone 24/7. What is it like in schools with technology? How much do you think that the school system rests upon technology? How much influence do you think technology has on learning right now? And how much tech literacy is important to students?
It depends on the school. For example, at Norma Rose, we don't use technology much unless we're researching or doing something to do with research. Yeah, something that's educational. However, at places like Norma Rose, technology's everywhere. You are given an iPad. You are supposed to do all your classwork on the iPad. You're supposed to do all your work online. There's no paperwork, none of that. It's all online.
Really? No cursive? I remember cursive writing being the bane of my existence. So is it, you're just totally on an iPad at that school?
Essentially, more or less, excepting a couple things. There, occasionally, we, very rarely, we had a English class or two where we learned to write a bit. We also had a math class, which barely taught us math, but nonetheless, you had to write a bit of that, though you were answering all the questions on the app.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, that's really fascinating. I always found the obsession with tech strange, and I, you know, personally, I trace it back to the effect that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have on, you know, American schools, and just the effect that it has on Canadian schools as well. You know, Microsoft trying to sell its products to as many students as it can. Same with Apple as well. All those incentive programs and getting people kind of hooked on screens. Then, ironically enough, it turns out all those tech giant families, you know, the oligarchs themselves, they never let their kids near the screens themselves. So it really just shows how detrimental it is to student learning. So that's interesting. Yeah, so I guess to round out our conversation, is there anything else that you guys like to discuss, you know, maybe your, you know, future program, places to engage students, or, you know, how you guys are going to hopefully build this organization?
We hope to set up discussion sessions about all this type of theory. We hope to discuss all these theories in detail. We hope to, as part of our public education program, effectively, we want to, you know, show people all these works. We want to host reading groups about them. We want to host perhaps public debate sessions about them. Anything to do with creating a better, more educated, and more literate society, effectively.
And I guess mainly, we really want to get people actually caring and get them interested about politics and the problems, the crises we have at hand right now. Because at least my peers, from what I've seen, they don't really care about it as much as we should be.
And what do you attribute that to? What do you think? Why do you think students aren't engaged?
I guess one perhaps it's the school not teaching about it at all, and two perhaps the stress of school, schooling itself, the over stressfulness of school itself, could contribute to the students becoming more nearsighted and only focusing on their current being instead of the larger problems.
That's interesting. Yeah, I guess, you know, anything to get people more engaged. Well, I really appreciate you guys, you know, coming on and discuss these topics. You know, I'm really excited for you guys' organization. You know, you're always welcome to discuss more topics and get the word out. I mean, and of course, you know, if you ever need more, you know, cutting analysis, please, you know, hit me up. You know, I'd love to, you know, talk shop with you guys. So, I mean, if there's any other concluding remarks you'd like to make, you know.
Thank you for having us on your show.
Thank you for your time.
Yeah, anytime. I'm really happy to help you guys out. So we're just going to take a short break for commercials, but we'll be right back after that.
Girls Rock Camp Vancouver is proud to present the 2019 Showcase.
Featuring 8 camper bands who wrote and learned their songs all in 1 week with special bands Primp and Biawana.
Come down to the Wise Hall Saturday, July 13th. Doors at 12:30 p.m., show at 1 p.m.
Let's see here, World of Warps in a band. God, ugh.
Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful. Isn't there anything?
Anything? Anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
Crimes and Treasons Radio, this is Riff Raff. Every Tuesday from 9 to 11 p.m. on 101.9 FM with Relly Rails and Jules Andre Brown.
What's up, everybody? We're back. You're listening to the Spencer Latu Show on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory. I'm joined with special guests Howie and Max. They have a few more things they want to say before we call it a night. So, guys, please feel free to take it away.
Okay, for one, at schools like No Burrows, there was practically no science education. Specifically, lessons were approximately one per every 1 to 3 months, and we learned basically no scientific topics except how to maybe do really horrible drawings of cells.
And as many of the high school students have noticed, many of the enriched or advanced placement or AP programs have been completely eviscerated, perhaps due to funding or some other factors. Without the enriched and AP programs, the students will not have as good a starting point for universities, for, you know, APs are a university course.
Yeah.
So for those who want to learn ahead, that you know, that is the huge disadvantage. And for people who want to prepare themselves for the future, that is, you know, again, a pretty big disadvantage.
Yeah, they definitely need to offer AP programs. I never took one myself, but I saw a lot of friends that did really well in them. Is there anything else you guys want to say?
I guess one last thing.
If the final thing we want to say is about the grade system. The grade system does not evaluate smarts or ability. Effectively, it only evaluates the ability of a student to run through a nice little maze, like a nice little bunch of mice. Mm-hmm. Effectively, it doesn't
Very well put.
Test smarts. It tests maze running ability. Effectively, it tests the ability to memorize a bunch of little facts instead of actual knowledge or actual thought ability.
So the reason behind why we say this is just the number system itself, because for one it tries to quantify the metaphysical, aka knowledge. Mm-hmm. Which, how do you do that? and secondly, it puts more focus on the numbers instead of actually learning. Because you can go through an entire year without actually permanently learning anything, and you can graduate with a 95%.
Yep. That's pretty indicative of a lot of people, especially when they make it to university, and then they have really nothing to say when it comes time for class.
Yeah. And this also gives rise to people like tutors, people who use tutors to get through everything.
The tutor industrial complex.
Yeah.
We'll cover that one on another show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this just goes to show how bad the school board and the school system is failing right now.
Yeah, well, and I think your guys' initiative will really help. I think students need a voice. I think that the more students who are involved politically, I think that, you know, they can't say no to all of you guys. I mean, they need you. You guys are the youth are our future. So, you know, props to you guys for getting this started. I wish you only the best of luck. I think that's all the time we have for this evening. So thank you so much for joining us. If you want to hear more, check out the Spencer Latu Show on social media at Spencer Latu, and also on Apple iTunes Podcast. So we'll stay tuned for more awesome programming from CITR.
Gee, your station has a lot of problems.
Tell me about it. Just look at our morning guy.
Hello, this is Mole Man in the Morning. Good Mole Man to you. Today, part 4 of our series of the agonizing pain in which I live every day.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, not the home of Mole Man in the Morning.
Thank you. surprise.